Welcome, everybody, to your journey through Time Lords and Space, The Lonely TARDIS, episode 4 of season 3, I guess you could say. We are going to talk all about the latest Doctor Who episode known as, somebody else want to chime in besides me this week?
Time Heist.
Time Heist. I'm Dali Domofsky.
Time Heist.
What,
Time Heist.
The names you heard, the voices you heard there were Stephen Strum.
Sunday. Time Heist.
Sean Norton.
Shut the D up, except when you're talking about Time Heist.
And Marcus Beer.
It's the eyebrows.
And we love Doctor Who. And I'm glad to have you guys back. Last week was such a divisive week in Doctor Who television, at least this season. I'm going to just put it out there, just the vibe I've been getting. We did a quick little pre-show Q&A setup. I think we're going to be a little bit more positive this week now. As you all remember, last week, I loved last week's episode, Listen. I was maybe the only person that had that much love for it. This week's episode, Time Heist, I'm going to jump right in and say I loved this episode even more. This is my favorite episode this season. And any fan of Doctor Who didn't like this episode can just, you know what? Forget watching TV anymore. You don't understand good television.
First thing I want to clear up is, like, I'm pretty sure Sean liked last week's episode too, if I'm not mistaken.
But not loved, like, I should say. Not loved like I loved, I should say. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's so, growing on me with time. I think I'm
with time. Anyway, oh, yes. Was that a pun?
Better not have been. I don't want to have to quit this show. You know?
Puns allowed.
It was a pun. It was a great pun. It was a huge pun.
Can we not talk about last week's episode? I've wiped it from my mind.
Well, let's tell.
With a memory in that ship.
Here's a brief recap of this episode. Doctor and Clara find themselves with their memories having been wiped in a stuck in a bank, trying to make their. What they don't know is if it's an escape or what it is. With two other individuals, they come to find out that they're actually there to rob the bank or do something in this bank and make it all the way to the big central vault, which they do. And there's a big revelation at the end that what they're actually there for is to rescue a teller. A teller is a alien, really cool looking alien that can read minds and turn people's minds to jelly, to pudding, I guess you could say. A second time we've talked about human brains and pudding.
And I like that you've said everything except for the thing that the doctor himself calls it, which is soup.
Which is soup, correct. Episode. Exactly. Soup coming out of the eyes. They have to rescue his mate, I guess, from the evil Bank of Karabaxos bank teller, I guess, the owner.
You will rob the Bank of Karabaxos.
That was good.
Yep. And that was basically in. As the gist of the story. So let's instant thoughts. Just what did you guys think? You heard that I loved it. I want to go around and hear. I want to start with Marcus this time, because Marcus, you were so negative last week. I want to see you. I want to hear you happy.
Well, what did I tweet to you on Saturday night after I saw it?
That you basically loved it. That you really enjoyed it, I should say.
I really liked it. Still a couple of issues. I mean, and we'll talk through those later, but it felt fun. It bounced along at a good pace. I mean, the couple of twists in the end were cool. I mean, I think a lot of us probably got to the conclusion that of who the architect actually was about 90 seconds before. Everybody was like, yeah, okay. But yes, it was fun, and it wasn't too Moffat-y.
Right.
The best thing I can say, and the highest compliment I can give now, is that whoever managed to temper the Moffat-ing, and the Moffat-ing is probably the big bad for this season. So yeah, I liked it a lot.
Sean, what did you think?
It had a very good closed loop. You know, it was time travel done right, in my opinion, at least as right as Doctor Who usually gets it. I thought it had a very good feel to it. It felt, in my opinion, and I'm not obviously as savvy on quote unquote vintage Who as some of us might be, but I thought it felt like a kind of classic Doctor Who story, just in like, you know, the whole premise and him going back because he sent himself back, and the fact that he didn't go back to really rob so much as help him, and it just I just thought it was well done from start to finish. And I liked it on pretty much every level. I just thought it was, I thought it was phenomenal. This was one of those episodes that I thought we kind of deserved. And well, I guess that's weird coming from me because I've liked the whole season so far. But, you know, I just like with between Capaldi and then the companions of the week that were way better than the usual stuff.
Oh, God, they were great. They were great. And then
Clara, again, was spot on. And, you know, even the villain, which pretty often is relatively underdeveloped. I thought this week that was fine because of the reveal we got at the end. And just Capaldi is just, I mean, he's still just killing it. I mean, mm-hmm. he takes everything good and makes it great. And he takes everything bad and makes it pretty okay. So, and he just, this week he had so much good to work with. I thought it was just stellar. I thought it was stellar from beginning to end.
Excellent. Steven.
Sean, going off of exactly what Sean said, like you say classic Who, you say you're worried that you don't know enough about like old school classic Who. I don't even think you need to go that far back. I think you like look at 2005 series on, this mm-hmm. feels like a episode like from seasons 1 through 4. It just feels like a like you said, a closed loop.
Yep.
And we used to get that a lot like prior to Moffat, because like that was one of Russell T. Davies' big things. It was just like you would have a little bit of a hint as to what mm-hmm. might happen, but it was a secret and you didn't really have an overarching story necessarily by itself. And this feels like an episode from one of those types of seasons, one of those types of seasons where we don't necessarily have to shove everything into a perfect like bow that ties into what's going to happen next. It's just, yeah, that made it a lot of fun. Like, I think that just right from the get-go, like the trailer for the episode, like you will rob the bank of Carabraxis with that great voice and everything like that. It just sets the tone so well as like, it's just going to be a story. It's going to be a bank heist story. It's not the most original story in the world, but we're going to give it a Doctor Who spin. And that's a time when Doctor Who can shine.
Yeah, it was.
No,
go ahead, Sean.
Just touching on that for a second. It's kind of funny because this is the kind of stuff that I wanted when Moffat originally said he wasn't going to be doing more of the overarching season stuff. He was going to focus more on individual stories and adventures and stuff. And this is exactly the kind of episode I was hoping for, assuming he was telling the truth. And now I think if you look at the count as we get into halfway through the season, I think it's kind of half and half, right? Like they introduce a potential big bad in the first episode. They show her again in the second. They hinted her at the third. But then fourth and fifth, there were no references whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like these were standalone episodes that we have gotten nothing to tease the eventual letdown that could be the end of the season or anything like that. And it's all just been self-contained, and I thought that was a really nice throwback. Like it was and ironically enough, I would like to see elements of this episode in future Who. Like I would not mind these two companions coming back. Like seeing them again, yep. Fleshing out those characters, having them travel with the Doctor. Like I think that would be stellar. And we don't say that a lot on a lot of the other Moffat episodes. So,
yeah, this one didn't leave me with blue balls.
It was payoff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the thing. That's why I hated the last episode so much, because it just felt like such an anticlimax. Mm-hmm. This time it was a climax, and there was climaxing everywhere, and you know, everybody had to wipe themselves off afterwards, and it was good. Because I am always the most mm-hmm. positive one here, let's talk about a couple of the negatives. It was another recycling episode in a lot of ways. There was, if you go back to the Haunted House episode with Matt Smith, early, I think, in Clara's timeline, where, you know, they went to that house in like 1970s England, and there was the rift, and they had to pull the two, you know, the male and female together so that they could go off on a new planet. That was another reusable from the most recent one. And I got to say, when I started seeing the side characters die this time, or what we thought was dying, I was a little pissed.
Right. You thought it was going to happen again, right?
It's just like Dalek. You know, the Dalek episode, you know, Into the Dalek a couple of weeks ago, where two characters earlier, their side characters, but they die. And, mm-hmm. I was half expecting that we were going to see Missy or Biffy or whatever her name is pop up again. But this time around, when it came to that reveal and they were in the office and they thought they were going to get executed and boom, it worked. It was like, thank you. Thank you for not being such a downer. Thank you for all, giving us a different payoff. Thank you for, not giving us the Moffat that we expect for once. And so, those are my only two major issues. It did feel, it felt kind of Russell T. Davis-y. It felt a little bit, not quite as good as, like Midnight, which was, again, mm-hmm. one of my favorite episodes. It didn't feel, quite as good as that, but it was still a lot better. And, especially after some of the drops we've had in the name of Who this season.
So, one thing I found really awesome about this episode was that, so obviously there was a lot of, almost like an homage to the Ocean's 11 movies, right? The Ocean's movies. This was Ocean's 4. I guess you could say everybody had their specific job to do. That's why the Doctor kind of went and recruited these individuals. That was a big reveal, by the way. Spoiler, the Doctor was the architect. Recruits these individuals. Psy, who's kind of a hacker with his augmented computer brain. And I think Cybra was the mutant.
Sabra
was the mutant human. She could transform or shapeshift, I guess you could say.
She had Mystique powers.
Mystique powers, yeah. Mystique from the X-Men. So
half uncontrollable, though. I mean,
exactly.
It was like kind of a curse, right?
And they were both,
which I thought was a really nice touch on the shapeshifting.
Yep. And I think the progression of the plot was great. The pacing was fantastic. It was fun from the very beginning to the end. So what I really enjoyed was the phone rings with the TARDIS in Clara's kitchen or wherever it was. The doctor says, what could happen? I'm just going to answer the phone. The moment he touches the phone, the very next scene is them around a table all throwing the memory worms down, which I love the memory worms. I'm so glad they brought back. That was from
Very well done.
Was that from the Snowmen episode?
Yep.
Yeah, Dr. Snowmen. So really glad to see that they brought those back and keep them in the continuity, because they were a cool little feature.
But it's a callback that doesn't crawl up its own ass like so much of this stuff.
Like a worm doesn't crawl up. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were even – the other callbacks are great, because when the teller is scanning the doctor's mind, he mentions the scarf from the fourth doctor. He mentions a bow tie, so he kind of brings back a couple things, which are, again, callbacks, but just good enough.
Yeah.
Did he make fun of himself, too? He said he was going minimalist, but wound up like a magician.
Wound up like a magician,
I think is also – I think that was like a lot of fan reaction, too, that he kind of looked like a magician. So I thought that was hilarious, like a nice little nod to
– Paul actually said that when he was going through his – how he wanted his costume to look. He wanted it to look like a magician. And I love it. Yeah, you're right. They worked. They worked that. And it'd be interesting to see if that was an ad lib or if it was, a piece of script.
And speaking on that for a second, if you don't mind. Sorry, Steve, a little fast. I wonder. We've kind of. There's this thing about retreading, right?
Yeah.
Which is constantly like. Now that it's happened in so many episodes. I hope that maybe there's a reason for that. Like, as this doctor continues to find his identity, which I don't think has happened this long, mm-hmm. at least not in New Who. Usually mm-hmm. it's the first episode, right?
Right.
Or the second. Maybe there's an overarching theme here. Maybe this is all going to come to a head and we're going to figure out the side of the doctor and it's all kind of going somewhere. Of course, probably not. And probably it's just, writers reusing ideas and stuff. But I kind of hope that this is kind of going somewhere as the doctor kind of retreads these similar ventures to things he's done before.
And I like the he keeps mentioning his eyebrows in almost every episode, and he mentions them again this time.
But before we get too far away from his appearance, I just wanted to say on the whole magician thing, like the fact that he is willing to kind of self-deprecate in this episode is actually really important to me, because for as good of an actor as I think Capaldi is, the I can dig the like more serious doctor, but he is. In the previous few episodes, he has come off like borderline actually just mean. And it just has opened up a lot of room for like the arguments that I've made for Clara feeling more like a Tennant/Smith doctor herself,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is great. But this is the first episode where I feel like Clara's not the star for me personally. Anyway, it's Capaldi. And part of that is because like he's having fun with himself a little bit. Like we used to see pre-Capaldi.
Yeah, there's two things. First, talking about the Psy character. First of all, I'm really glad there were no Gangnam Style jokes.
Yeah.
But second, there's a segment where Psy, he's trying to get the teller to come to him towards the end, and he has downloaded all these.
That's brilliant. And
the burglars, all the thieves from all through time, and that to me felt like something. That it was almost as if it was Matt Smith, Doctor.
Yes,
Matt,
sure.
Doctor.
Yep.
You know that it was almost that delivery, and it was that cockiness of that of the Doctor. When he went in the Pandora and standing on him, and he was like, "Here I am, come get me." It was that feel, but because it didn't come from the Doctor, it felt fresh.
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of that. And I think you guys have made great points. And Stephen, you kind of mentioned that the parts of Tennant and Smith are in Clara right now, and Marcus, I think that's right in line with it. We're seeing like the last two Doctors in the supporting cast, right? And we're seeing the latest Capaldi be his own person. I think that's fantastic. I think that's such a novel approach and such a refreshing approach.
It's refreshing. What do you make of? Say that, but oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, no, I'm just gonna. I mean, if you want to go, I'm just gonna kind of move on to the Capaldi reaction, the certain things that happened to him. But if you want to finish on whatever Dali was talking about,
okay, mine's quick. I was just gonna say it's interesting, Dali, that you say that's refreshing when it's literally us seeing something that before we've seen a million times. We've seen like the sort of like just shy of self-sacrifice Dr. Tennant Smith thing before, and like you said, just seeing it come from somebody else makes it feel fresh. It's weird.
Yeah, we've seen it a couple times this season already, where somebody else will sacrifice themselves.
Yeah, there are people who are dying this time, and this Doctor doesn't care. And Clara,
is
feeling that, and that's such a change up from the previous two previous three. And that's a good thing. That's where I think Capaldi's coming through, and his cantankerous old Doctor is to me a big changer. Please go on what you were going to say.
I was just going to chime in. We see these reactions, though, and it's a testament to Capaldi, and I think we've talked about this before, how much he can convey just with his face and his eyes and everything and just his expression. And we saw it when the shapeshifter, we thought that she died, right? And, we've seen it. We saw it when I think he got hugged at the end, or maybe it was last week, or somebody kissed his cheek or whatever. He's processing these things, and I'm not sure where they're going with it. I don't know if it's still building on that whole he's trying to figure himself out and he really is a good man underneath and all this other stuff, or if it's going to go somewhere else and they're going to keep this kind of doctor, or darker doctor, rather. But they're spending so much time on
a darker.
I was going to say that next.
Darker, yes.
Oh boy,
darker. Who?
But
they're spending enough time on these glances and these contemplative thoughts and expressions and stuff that I'm personally curious which direction they're going to go. If they're going to kind of return him to kind of like the roots of the character by the end, but of course with the Capaldi kind of curmudgeon side to it, or if they're going to keep this line, and that's kind of where he's going to be. Where that side where like the new companions kind of don't like him, and Clara has to kind of defend him, almost like somebody like, no, you don't really know him like I do. No, it's okay. And people are like, this guy's a dick.
So. Yeah, I mean, Psy says like, you're really good at the excuses. You must have been with him for a while. You're really good at the excuses thing, right? Like she is there to basically be the like, hey, I see the best in him because I've seen him at his best. Whereas this Capaldi is not. For as good as his portrayal has been, like his just acting has been, like the characterization of the character has been very much like, this is not the Doctor at his best. This is the Doctor at his most like uncaring.
Well, you know,
and something's going on under that surface.
What's interesting is this is different because this is a Doctor who shouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. And this is a Doctor who's on his 13th regeneration. This might be part of a longer con from Moffat and his crew that, we're seeing this Doctor who still doesn't know who he is yet. I mean,
because he's not supposed to be, right? He's not supposed to be there. Yeah. Good point.
Perhaps he isn't. I mean, he has the memories, but perhaps he is not. He is never going to be, you know, the Doctor of the past or the Doctor where, you know, these shining moments perhaps come through. I mean, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on inside that, you know, 2,000-year-old head. And, you know, when you factor in this whole heaven and, you know, the mysterious female character, you know, maybe there is some sort of long con going on here. And, you know, come the season finale or the Christmas special, we're going to see some payoff. And, you know, we still haven't figured why he looks like the guy from the Pompeii episode. So yeah, I mean, there's unanswered questions that I'm happy are not being answered yet. And because of this episode, I'm a lot happier, you know, and thinking about them and putting more thought into it, especially after the last one where everything that was unanswered was a frustration.
Right.
Or was answered, wasn't answered properly, in my opinion. Whereas Saturday, everything got answered that needed to be answered. Mm-hmm. Everything was set up very nicely, as we discussed. But then there's this other long-term lingering stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously, one of the things that we've talked about before.
we know Sean is entering the TARDIS right now.
Hey, Sean.
The one time Sean doesn't mute himself.
Yeah, there's a mute button, mate. I've read today that Clara, if she leaves, it's going to be at the end of the Christmas special because she's definitely in the Christmas special.
Yep, she's definitely in it. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, look, you know, the Time Lords.
Yeah, there's still so much, and you know, we have to hear more about Gallifrey. That couldn't have just been pushed aside, you know, at the end of the anniversary
the movie.
Episode. The movie. Say, the movie. But you know, so what I love. Whoa. That's the blowhorn to silence us. So what I really loved, that was also Sean leaving us. I think he got sucked into the TARDIS. So, you know, I really enjoyed this episode because it felt very holistic. You could watch this episode if you weren't a Doctor Who fan and understand right away what Doctor Who is about, right? Because this is the singular episode. We've been hoping for episodes like this that could show up and just kind of tell a story in and of itself and not tie you down to anything beforehand or afterwards and still get a gist of the, you know, of the character. And you're right, Stephen, we hadn't seen these since like the first four seasons of, you know, this new series, you know. So I enjoyed it for that fact. I also really loved the set pieces, everything except crawling through vents. But everything else I really enjoyed.
Doctor Who has a weird thing about like hallways.
Yeah.
Like, that episode where like Amy and Rory are trapped in the TARDIS. The TARDIS is just a bunch of hallways.
Yeah.
And his bangs is just a bunch of hallways. What's with the hallways?
I think that was just an easy way to make TARDIS look bigger without making any spending any more money.
Yes, exactly. It's called the BBC Wales production budget. we can still, you know, for every time that, you know, they can reuse a set or, you know, I mean, if you look at 90% of the episodes where they're running down the big ass hallways, it's basically underneath the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff. I have been, I recognize. But yeah, I mean, you see a lot of these things from different angles, but that means they put more money into the SFX, and I thought the Teller creature, it reminded me of the three-eyed Reese monster, you know, monster from Star Wars.
Yep, yeah.
It did remind me a bit of that, yeah. You
know, that looked really good, and, you know, I've long come to accept some of the limitations with regards to the Doctor Who filming budget and everything, but I think this episode would have been better served coming earlier in the season.
Yes. I agree.
It's only episode 5 now. But honestly, perhaps we didn't even need, you know, the first episode, the dinosaurs, then blah, blah, blah. Perhaps we didn't need the standard, it's the Doctor, he's regenerated, has amnesia, he's running around in a nightshirt, no matter how cool Capaldi was. Wouldn't it have been great if the feature budget, you know, the people You know, well, the time that they put in, because it was an hour and 20,
something like that. Yep, 90 yeah. minutes or yeah, 80 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, they yeah, could have put that into this one, and that extra 20 or so minutes could have been to, you know, just get some of the initial exposition out of the way, where it's like, yeah, you know, even he, you know, we show that he dropped her off and just sure. disappeared and left her felt abandoned and then came back. And it's like, you know, are you ready? And she doesn't know who this doctor is. And that might have, you know, that might have been a great season opener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and then I would have felt, I think, way more kind and less curmudgeonly to what followed, because it's been up and down. First episode was shit. Second episode was pretty good. The Sherwood one, I actually kind of enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Heavy on the, and then we all know, you know, what last week was. But I think it was because the first four episodes have been so underwhelming mm-hmm. compared to what we expect out of Stephen Moffat and what we know he can produce.
I thought they were about level on what we expect from Stephen Moffat these days. Like, but yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Like, a much colder open with a much more solid premise to it than the really kind of recycly. Like, we've talked at length about the recycling of stories on Doctor Who and stuff like that this season, but the hour and 20 minutes would have totally been spent much better on, rather than recycle a story that we've seen on Doctor Who, which is not what this episode does. It takes a story idea that's pretty basic, pretty well known and understood mm-hmm. and trodden ground, but we've not seen Doctor Who do it before, and we've not seen their take on it. And seeing, like, if they want to, like, if they're just running out of ideas of what to write, if that, which I don't think is the case. I think there is probably some reason that they're going back to stuff. But if they are just running out of ideas and they just need to go back to the well on, you know, tropes, like, this would have been a much more solid one to start things off. A colder open, faster pace, mm-hmm. get mm-hmm. the extra exposition in there, like DeMarcus said, with the extra 20 minutes, and just be done with it.
It, again, just a really great episode. I hope that there's more like this, because I think that, you know, I think they need to happen this way. We're halfway through the season, guys. There's only five more episodes left, and I think that's something that we need to know. What's going to happen? What's the big catch at the end of the season? We know Heaven is going to be a part of it. That's going to be the big finale. So we have four episodes between now and then to take place. And so, irregardless, I love saying irregardless. It's not even a real word. Regardless. I'm just glad this episode happened, because, like you guys said, it just shows that Who can be Who, and it can be everything that you want it to be, and still rekindle that Doctor Who magic. And Stephen Moffat, as low as a few of you guys were on him last week, and he was only part writer for this episode. So I think Stephen Thompson. Yeah. Was the other
yes,
artist?
Yep.
He was only a part writer, and I think that's why I liked it. So
maybe that maybe that's what worked well, was that Moffat kind of gives a little bit of oversight, or a little bit of information or critiquing, I guess, but less another writer kind of handle the actual plot and story, which could be a very cool way to hopefully.
That's what a showrunner is supposed to do. That's what an exec producer is supposed to do, who has also happened to be, you know, there's a script lead. Maps out the idea, the arc of the season. This is point A.
Yep.
This is point B. And these are all the fractions in, you know, of mm-hmm. letters that go in between. And that's what he's supposed to do. But he's been, I think, a little too hands-on. Yep. And I think he stepped away. I mean, all right, let's talk about next week's episode.
Yes, yeah.
The teaser.
The read Caretaker, yep.
Yeah, and I've read a synopsis. It looks like this is where it's going to kick off, with Pink and the Doctor and everything, mm-hmm. and there's good, interesting stuff. Again, going back to school reunion, Sarah Jane, mm-hmm. John Smith, the science teacher, we're back seeing the Doctor in a school environment. I think this time, however, I'm a little more interested. I mean, I love Reunion, don't get me wrong, but I'm a little more perhaps okay with what this might be setting up, because I'm looking at it. This is the Doctor back at the Coal Hill School,
mm-hmm.
down the road from the Totter's Yard.
Yes.
This this is full circle. This is the Doctor, you know, going back, you know, really.
Oh, sure. Back. Historically, yeah.
So, I mean, could this be what builds into perhaps the crescendo and the finale? I mean, are there things, nice to see how, if they pull anything off at all, I mean, if they totally ignore it, I might be a bit miffed. Because, you know, especially when we know that Ian Chesterton's on the board of governors.
Yeah.
There's definitely, and this is where I like to see, I don't like it when Moffat rewrites Doctor Who mythology, but I like it when, you know, he and Russell T. Davis had a little bit of fun with it.
Yes.
And I'm hoping this episode kicks off, like I said, the final four run. And we get to see some, you know, stuff of, you know, of historical note, and that can show people who are new to Who, you know, who'd only experienced it perhaps, you know, in the Christmas special or, you know, the Day of the Doctor, that there's much more to this. I mean, wouldn't it be great if he's actually, the TARDIS is back in the TARDIS yard?
Awesome. The episode is written by, co-written by Gareth Roberts and Stephen Moffat. So Stephen Moffat is kind of doing the same thing he did this week's episode. And for those that don't remember Gareth Roberts, he's actually a longtime Who writer and collaborator. He started with books and novelizations, and then he actually wrote four episodes. He wrote, get ready, The Shakespeare Code, The Unicorn and the Wasp.
Okay.
Our favorite, The Lodger, and Closing Time.
You know what? If you had told me this last week, I'd have been like, oh boy. But then, like, the fact that this episode was written by the man behind Journey to the Center of the TARDIS with Stephen Moffat, like, if maybe that's just what it takes. Maybe it just takes a little bit of a Moffat touch on top of somebody who can do, like, a solid action-y story, like, which all those are action-y stories. Mm-hmm. You know, to just move things along out, and then just Moffat is just there to just like say like, no, this is how you make this not just fun and actiony, but you can add a little bit of heart and a little bit of character to it. But like
I would say, sorry to interrupt, because you know I love doing. and not that I'm defending the obviously very Welsh Gareth Roberts. This might be the episodes you reeled off, the ones he wrote before. Very story, character driven.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Unicorn and the Wasp had some action-y elements, but it was a historical one. The Lodger, again, lots of interaction.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
A fair amount of comedy from James Corden as well. Closing Time, ditto. You know, Closing Time not as good as The Lodger, in my opinion. But again, these are character driven ones, which I think it's going to need if you're going to have eyebrows clashing with pink.
Yep.
Sure.
That might actually be, you know, this might actually be a good thing. And we'll see how Moffat obviously handles his bit. I mean, perhaps Moffat's there to throw in, the little bits of interplay with the history. Correct. So I'm actually, we know it's an Earth-grounded episode, of which we, if you disclude the first, forget the first one, the first episode of this season. I mean, that was barely, London as far as I'm concerned. But this time, this Doctor has been on Earth in any way for an actual adventure.
Oh, sure. Like during contemporary times, too, like you said, if you're ignoring the first episode. But, if you can just say, contemporary times, he's not been to Clara's world. Like, this Doctor has not been to Clara's world. which is definitely an interesting point. And also, I forgot that I kind of really do like The Lodger, so I guess I should have brought that.
That was with his friend, Craig?
Yeah, Craig.
Craig. It's Corden, who is now taking over the Late Late Show from Craig Ferguson.
Yeah, amazing. Which is
super surprising.
Yeah.
Well, he's been very popular on Broadway. He won a Tony or something for his thing on Broadway. And he's a funny guy. I mean,
definitely.
He co-wrote Gavin and Stacey. And if you ever want an idea of Wales and England, and
Welsh humor.
He won the BAFTA for that, by the way. He won the BAFTA for that.
Well, Greg, Gavin and Stacey was one of the funniest shows ever. I mean, if you haven't seen it, I would recommend it because
it's on Netflix. I believe it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Watch some Gavin and Stacey, love. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing, what they do with it. One thing I want to throw out, I read this morning, the Daily Mirror in the UK, which is a tabloid rag, and they basically, you know, said that last week's episode was too scary and it's on later at night. It's later on at night now. It's not at the usual time of what it's at 6 o'clock. It comes on at 8 or 8:30 in the UK. So, you know, kids are going to bed directly afterwards. And they ask the question, is it too scary for kids? Which totally harks back to the 70s, by the way, and the Baker era where we had the television parents council or whatever back then who were criticizing it and said it was too scary. And I just got to say, if your kid is too young, if you're a 4 or 5 year old, you know, perhaps they shouldn't be watching Doctor Who at that night.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, everybody's got a fucking DVR. DVR it, bet it, watch it. I like the fact, Doctor Who is supposed to be a little bit scary for kids. I like the fact that this season, it's lesser, you know, while there has been some kiddie stuff in it, and that's just Moffat's writing, I like the fact that it's actually a little more grown up. It's a little more, you know, it has that kitchen sink drama element, which is Clara's love life. Mm-hmm. And that was things that Russell T. Davis did very well. I mean, you know, he did the kitchen sink with, you know, Rose and Donna's family and, you know, and stuff like that. And I think when Moffat tried it with the Ponds, I think it kind of fell flat on its face.
So let's give our ratings for this week's episode of Doctor Who. Let's say out of five memory worms, how many memory worms do you give it? I'm going to start with Sean because his... Wait. Go ahead, Steven.
Sorry, Deli. Before you did that, I just wanted to actually, I was gathering my thoughts on a little bit of something that I wanted to respond to Marcus with. I forgot your name there for a second, Marcus. I'm sorry.
Very easy to forget, yeah.
Memory worms. It happens.
Memory worms.
I had one right in my hand the whole time. What were we talking about? What's Doctor Who? No, what I was going to say was that, so you mentioned very early on in the episode that we're recording now, not the episode of the show, but you mentioned School Reunion. And, mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about the upcoming episode and whatnot. And I watched School Reunion recently during that, Doctor Who marathon, that Essentials marathon or whatever. And it made me remember that, of course, they didn't show a lot of it. Like, there was a lot of, looking towards the camera and screaming and then cutting away to the intro. But in those early Russell T. Davies seasons, a lot of friggin' people die on Doctor Who. Like, it happens a ton. And while that has been, cut down significantly in recent Who, we see one person die in this episode. We see there's the clone who, I guess, possibly dies or possibly doesn't die, who knows. But the guy who gets, his brain sucked out, it's, one person dead.
Superman.
Superman?
Superman.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's just this. I always kind of have a problem with psychic attacks for some reason in fiction and all that. Just kind of weird me out a little bit. They just always seem like a weirdly violating kind of experience when it's used for violence. But also just the crushed head look. For only having one person actually die on screen in this episode, that creeped me right out. That just looked gnarly and.
He didn't actually die.
Mind is gone. He's dead.
He didn't die. I mean, it was obvious. Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah. The temporal lobe was gone and his brain was soup. But you did see him chained up in
still
a cell.
Alive, yeah.
It was like a severe soupy lobotomy.
Yeah.
That's as far as I'm concerned. That's dead. That's yeah.
I hope so, for his sake.
And that's actually part of why it reached out to me so viscerally or whatever. Just like I said, for some reason, the idea, psychic stuff, digging around in other people's minds, for some reason it just hits me on a weird level. And then the visual of his head just being crushed in like that, it looked like something that could happen almost to someone who had just been in a car accident or something like that in a weird way. And
so somehow, without going into too much detail, I actually have a friend with a condition where he had to have surgery and part of his skull was removed, and he does look a lot like that character. And so it actually hit me in kind of a really weird way. My friend is completely fine. Obviously, he has, he has to wear head protection, but it did kind of get to me in a little bit. It affected me a little bit differently, but I totally understand what you're thinking there, Stephen.
Yeah. Without getting into so many words, like that sort of thing, I have seen that before as well. And mm-hmm. That was part of why it hit me too, I guess, was, mm-hmm. Just like knowing that that's kind of a thing is a real thing. It's just like, it creeped me out.
It's brutal.
That is interesting as well, because I mean, you said, you know, you go back to a lot of people dying at the beginning of Russell T. Davis's era. I mean, how many people died in the season opener this year?
Oh my
gosh.
You know, were turned, you know, into zombies or whatever. And then replaced until, to build the ship. And then you'd go to Dalek and you see two, companions, if you will, that episode die, as well as hundreds of others from the Dalek onslaught. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really affect you as much.
Mm-hmm.
And please don't take my phrasing the wrong way, but I think it's a case of quality over quantity. This one guy was the only fatality, if you will.
Yep.
He was the only casualty. And the way it was done was more impactful than, because we're so used to seeing soldiers getting mowed down. And, you know, we don't really think about, he's building a skin ship. Well, hang on, what?
We didn't see it happen on screen. You know, it's just like, sure, like that's a, whatever, crazy Doctor Who thing, whatever.
But I like the way they did it this week.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it did stand out, and it was the only major casualty, if you will. It's looted for the stuff, so.
Yeah, it all raised the stakes in a way that, like, just wanton murder wouldn't have raised the stakes.
They weren't wrong, right? I mean, they kind of got lucky, because didn't they go to the lobby expecting the other intruders, but then they found him? But then afterwards, she was like, wait, what do you mean that wasn't the intruder?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess he was still guilty. I mean, they didn't liquefy somebody's brain by accident, right?
He was guilty because he knew that he had forged currency. He was depositing forged currency, and he knew that. Okay. They had no idea why they were there.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, they didn't have that level of guilt, because they didn't have a plan in place other than, guilty of giving somebody, with the mutant gene, somebody else's DNA to turn into a different character to get to point B.
That was the point of the memory worms, yeah.
That's crazy. But that's Who at its best, right?
Yeah.
When it makes you think about this stuff, whether or not it's off screen or whatever. So.
And Sean, you watched the episode again before recording this podcast. And I think I'm going to do the same thing, because I'm sure you probably picked up on some things afterwards. They were like, oh, okay, I get it now. Yep.
Of this episode? Actually, I didn't do that. I do that with everyone.
I'm sorry, Marcus. I meant Marcus.
Yeah. I tried to, but this time I just didn't have the time.
No. We're both devilishly handsome men. It's an easy
mistake. That's true. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, I just like to, this was the first one that, I rewatched the season opener and kind of fell asleep during it. But this one I watched through because I enjoyed it. And, like I said, that's where it popped out to me, the whole Sai, when he downloaded the thieves. That popped out as, hang on, that's the sort of thing a Matt Smith would do.
So, yeah.
And I think, it was worth rewatching, and it certainly raises more questions, but good questions, and not easy outs. I touched your hand under the bed, a leg under the bed when you were a kid.
I thought you wiped that from your memory.
that's what the memory worms were for.
I couldn't help but think that guy kept reminding me of the guy way back from Eccleston's episode, the kid who he traveled with them. I kept thinking of him, and I don't know, I thought the dude maybe looked like him, or maybe the memory, the brain chips reminded me of it, I don't know, but I kept thinking of that guy.
No, yeah, good point.
The lead character from the last Deus Ex game.
Which I have yet to play. All right, let's do our reviews, and then we have a quick comment from one of our readers that are kind of interesting, but actually I'll go through the comment right now. JB at Shadows.
I love our podcast readers. They're the best.
They're awesome. They are. Our podcast readers are great. They also listen sometimes. JB at Shadows End says, the episode started off slow and a bit confusing. By the end, it was very enjoyable, and would love to see more of this type of doctor. And I think I wouldn't say it started off slow, but I can definitely see the confusing part, because you don't know why they're all there and things kind of happen quickly, but I think by design that ended up wrapping up really nicely in the end. So,
if anything, I think he means maybe I can see where he says it opens a little slow during the point where they are like basically just explaining all the defenses of Parabraxis.
Sure. Yeah. But all right. So, a number of memory worms out of 5. Let's start with you, Sean.
4.5.
4.5. Great. Steven.
I'm sorry, I forgot. 4.5 sounds like a good amount for a rating that means absolutely nothing. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why not 4.5?
I'm going to give this one, I'm going to give this a 5 because I think this was a Doctor Who, Doctor Who asked Doctor Who episode.
Perfect so Who.
5. This is a Perfect Who episode for me. And Marcus.
If I was just rating on strength of this season, I would give it a 5.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, I am always tempted to hold it up to the best Doctor Who, so I'm actually going to go with 4.25, just to fuck with it.
Again, with the lowest scores. No, just kidding.
It wasn't perfect. And right. I mean, look, for me, I've already said the 50th anniversary was the Perfect Who episode.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I wanted personally. But this was a hugely enjoyable Doctor Who where I didn't feel like I'd just been teased mm-hmm. and I didn't pay off. And for that, I am thankful.
Definitely.
Do you think so far we've had any episodes that we will look back on as ones that you must watch for Capaldi that are classics, you know, like not necessarily in the same exact vein, but like when I think of Matt Smith, I think of obviously Van Gogh and the Doctor's Wife, and of course Tennant has Blink and Girl in the Fireplace, stuff like that. Do you think we've seen any Capaldi stuff that in the future we're going to look back on and be like, yeah, you've got to watch Time Heist, or you've got to watch Listen or whatever?
I actually think Time Heist is kind of, I mean, so far, if we're, you know, if we're going looking at what we have to work with, then
it is early.
I would say this is definitely the strongest contender for that sort of thing. Like, it's just that the best episode they've had all season. So, like, I mean, by virtue of that alone, I think it's probably the best contender.
Go ahead.
Go on. Okay, well, maybe when we start next season, we can actually revisit each episode, discuss what we gave it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this time next year, we will know a lot more.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully more of the Doctor's story. I would personally say that, and you know, no matter how much I enjoyed this one as well, the best Doctor section of Capaldi's reign so far was the debut of the eyebrows in the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know what? Fair enough.
Very true. Very true.
He saw the fucking eyebrows, and now we know why. I was probably again his idea. I mean, he is so proud of those eyebrows that that was. That was, we don't know how far down the line that Doctor's going to be.
Yep. And he even, the interesting thing about that episode is when they said, we're going to have all 11 Doctors. And he chimes in at the very end and says, make that 12, which now we know is no longer the case.
Yeah. People are already discussing amongst themselves whether or not that event has even happened.
Yeah.
So
yep.
It's so we'll fun see. It's fun. Yeah. I don't even think, it might not be a question we can answer right now.
I don't think we'll ever answer that question. I think that... Yeah.
No, I mean whether or not any of these are like vintage Capaldi.
Sure. Sorry. Yeah.
But I am looking forward to, like Marcus said, in the future, looking back on this season, even when we do like a season recap and coming back to this very topic.
Definitely. One last thing, speaking of the Doctor and some of our favorite episodes. Are you guys familiar with, I know Marcus probably will be, but either you guys familiar with Simon Shama?
No.
So Simon Shama is kind of he's a little bit art critic. He's a TV personality now, a British personality. Fantastic speaker. Marcus, have you heard of Simon Shama?
Can't say I have.
Okay. Anyways, he's very opinionated. A really interesting dude. But he did a TV series or a series a few years ago called The Power of Art, and where he kind of spoke about different artists and so on. And one of the artists that he covered the life. He kind of covers these little mini biographies of Vincent van Gogh. And so at my office every Wednesday, I do these kind of little creativity sessions and during a lunch and learn thing. And I've been showing these Simon Shama movies, these videos. And when it gets to the Vincent van Gogh session, I'm going to follow it up immediately with Vincent and the Doctor, which is one of my favorite Doctor Who episodes where the Doctor meets Vincent Van Gogh and tie that in. So it'll be kind of a cool way to bring some of my Doctor Who love into other aspects of my life and force it upon other people.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you can actually buy the buy a print of the.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
I actually have it on my games room wall.
Oh, brilliant.
I framed it. And on the subject of Who merchandise, I mean, I think we all got sent that, the link to that guy who has 1,500 items of merchandise and is in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah.
But I was out with my wife yesterday. We went to a mall, which was fun. But we actually were walking past Hot Topic, and she grabbed – and Hot Topic now has – a wall of Doctor Who, which totally blew my
Marcus at Hot Topic. That by itself blows my mind. We may have lost Marcus. I don't hear him anymore.
I can hear him fine.
Me too.
I can't hear him at all.
He's still talking. So shut up, Dally.
All right. I don't hear Marcus. He's the one person I don't hear in the
call. Keep interrupting him. Like we just said.
You guys will have to. You'll have to tell me what he's saying because I don't hear him. It's blank on my end. Maybe it's for the better.
Dally, you can speak again.
You catch any of that?
Nope. And I don't think there was any audio in the entire.
Well, portion. To recap, I don't want that to get lost into the ethers. He was basically saying that. You know, they have like Doctor Who socks, which I'm sure you have, and t-shirts and stuff. And it's just mind blowing because in 99, when he moved here, you know, Doctor Who was a little presence in the US, none at all. And, you know, when it did come on, it was on Sci-Fi and nobody's making a push or anything. So he just, to him, it's just something special to be able to walk into a store like that and see like a shelf or a whole wall rather of Doctor Who merch is just fantastic. So.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, on that note, I'm going to have to shut down because, again, I can't hear Marcus in my...
Marcus, I thought that was very heartwarming, and I thought I liked it.
You know what? I can imagine how wonderful it is, Marcus, and I'm really glad that you shared that with the two guys that can hear you, because I can't... It's like I'm speaking to a Cyberman right now, but he can't speak any English. Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. Anyways, let's wrap up this show.
Oh, boy.
This is rough. Fucking
Mickey Mouse operation we got going.
Yeah,
here.
I know. You can thank Google. Google kicked Sean out, and it kicked Marcus's audio out of my...
Sorry about that.
Fair enough. Google Hangouts is garbage, and so is...
Well, it's usually been pretty good for us.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Today, maybe the internet is just rebelling today. Anyways, you can find us... at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter. LonelyTARDIS.com is our website. Please visit us. We'll have this episode up. Please feel free to comment on this episode. Let us know.
And they can like us on Facebook too,
yes,
right?
Yes, they can.
Like us on Facebook. I got to put that post up there to remind people to do that because that's a very public forum there, which is great. You can please rate and review this episode in iTunes. Again, it does help. We're getting some great ratings in there, but more ratings are always positive. I'm not telling you to put positive ratings. Just leave us ratings of how you feel. Tell us what you like about the episode.
Very smooth.
Smooth. Legally, blah blah blah. And so yeah, the more reviews we get, the better off it is for everybody. And with that said, you can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find Steven.
You can find me at Steven Strom, StevenStrom, and I am very, very close to 800 followers. So if anybody out there who – I don't know how many people actually listen to this podcast, but if anybody wants to try and get me to 1,000 followers, I would feel super happy about that.
That's our goal then. Our goal is to get you to 1,000 followers.
Beautiful. That's something I've learned. Turn it into some sort of giveaway if you get to 1,000 followers.
A Steve-away. A Steve
away. Steve away. Oh, wow.
If I get to if I get to 1,000 followers by, let's say – by the next episode seems a little too small. That doesn't seem quite enough. If I get to 1,000 followers by the end of in the Doctor Who Nation. if I get to 1,000 followers by the end of episode after next, two episodes from now, I will give away one of my own personal Doctor Who pieces of swag to one of the listeners.
Beautiful.
I'm telling you right now, all you have to do is tweet that. Marcus and I retweet it, mostly Marcus, and you'll be fine.
All right.
Speaking of you, Sean, where can we find you?
At Sean Norton, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
And Marcus, where can we find you, even though I can't hear you?
Did we lose Marcus too?
No, I can't hear him.
Now we've officially lost. See, it wasn't just me, guys. You can find Marcus.
Wait a minute.
He's a goofy guy.
I don't know what's happening.
Shh, Dally. Sorry, yeah. What was, say that again. Dally was talking annoyed over you. Gamer. Oh, okay.
At Annoyed Gamer. At Annoyed just Gamer. Like it sounds. Yeah. Yeah. And right now, at Annoyed Podcast Host.
At Annoyed, and probably at Annoyed Listeners, because just like Time Heist, we've had the last 3 minutes stolen.
Amateur hour at the Impala tonight.
At the Impala? In the back of a car? Is that what you're saying? The back
Apollo.
Of a they said at the Impala, God. Which would be horrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does sound like we're recording this in the back of a car.
You know, it's funny, when Marcus dropped out, the call audio went a lot better.
He's still here.
I don't hear him, which is the most amazing thing. I don't hear Marcus. Comedy Gold, I'm sure listeners, you're loving this. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you on the next episode of Lonely, of the Lonely TARDIS.
That was the most, like...
I don't got any juice in me right now. I can't deal with this.
Ooh,
I can't
you.
What's to give on that one, Steve.